Welcome to Walk in Truth. These are the Bible teachings of Pastor Michael Lance, equipping you to reach out with God's truth to all people and how to apply that truth to today's issues, trends, and culture. Learn more when you visit walkintruth.com. Now here's part two of Pastor Michael's teaching in 2 Samuel chapter 2 called Your Kingdom Come.
Then the men of Judah came and there, verse 4, anointed David king over the house of Judah. So remember, Judah's just in the south now. And they told David, saying, it was the men of Jabesh Gilead who buried Saul. So notice the men of Judah come. This may be the elders of the area. And they anointed David king, but only over what? Only over the house of Judah. What's interesting is we're going to see the seeds of the division of the kingdom come early on. Finally, under David and then Solomon, the tribes will actually unite. They will actually be one people under the leadership. But after Solomon, they fragment again. They are a people divided. It's the northern tribes and the southern tribes. Judah and Benjamin down here in the south, the area of Jerusalem, the Dead Sea area, and so forth. And up north, the Galilee region, the 10 northern tribes. And even a nation that was supposed to be one and supposed to be a light to the Gentiles could not even be united. Sound familiar? In fact, we're about to read about a civil war in Israel. There's a civil war in the history of the United States, but there's another war going on in our country right now. And here's what it is. What do we really believe? Who are we as a people? What are our foundations, and do they really matter anymore? That's a question that is before us all the time. And when I talk about our foundations, I'm talking about God. I'm talking about the Bible. I'm talking about the Christian Judeo ethic. I'm talking about the things that spring from that. And so David is anointed king, and he must have asked about Saul and what happened with the burial. And these men of Jabesh Gilead, we've read about them earlier. They were the ones that bravely walked all night. They came and got Saul's body, and they gave him a decent burial. So David's been anointed as king, but he has to wait and wait and wait some more to be finally over the entire nation. What are some good examples of waiting? Some of you had to wait a while to... How many of you were excited about getting your driver's license? I could not wait. Now, some teens in our culture seem to be a little hesitant about getting on the road. I'm not sure what's going on there. I know we're a little hesitant about them being on the road. I understand that. I remember one time we were coaching a Little League All-Star team. It was 13 and 14-year-olds, and we were having a practice on the field, and one of our players pulled up in a van. We're a little concerned because we're coaching 13 and 14-year-olds. So anyway, there you go. Some people don't wait, apparently. So David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh Gilead, and he said to them, "May you be blessed of the Lord, because you have shown this kindness to Saul, your Lord, and you have buried him." Another great thing about David's leadership is that he encouraged these men of Jabesh Gilead who showed bravery, risked their lives. He complimented them. And that's something that good leadership has to do as well. We need to be encouragers. And encourage means to put courage in. Discourage means to take courage out. What would you say you are, generally speaking? An encourager? Or a discourager? Well, David was an encourager, and he said, "May you be blessed. You've shown loyal love. You've shown hesed. And now may the Lord show loving kindness and truth to you," a great prayer. "And I also will show this goodness to you." David says, "I'm now the king, and I'm going to do this thing to you as well. I will show it to you." You know, most people, you guys, are not going to see God's love unless they see it through you. Would you agree? Jesus said, "They will know that you are my disciples by your love for one another." If you were to simplify the Christian walk, what you could just say is, "Lord, let everything I do this week be done in love. Let me speak the truth in love. Let me defer in love. Let me do kindly in love. Let me be careful of my words in love. And so David says to them, now, therefore, seven, let your hands be strong, be valiant. He puts courage into them, for Saul, your Lord, is dead. I know we've gone through a national tragedy, and also the house of Judah has anointed me king over them. David says, I'm your king. Be strong, be valiant. I will support you. I will bless you. But now we're about to have a swing in the story. There's a contrast with this man named Abner. Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, had taken Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. So all of a sudden, Abner comes on the stage. Abner was Saul's commander. Abner, I don't think, liked David very much. And I think part of the reason Abner didn't like David was Saul's attitude toward David. Saul was bitter, jealous, vengeful toward David, and Abner was around him all the time. There was a scene in the book of 1 Samuel where David snuck into the camp and he took Saul's, I think it was his spear and the water jug, went to the other side of the mountain and said, hey! And the camp over there had been sound asleep. The language is actually from Genesis when Adam was put into a sound sleep. And he called from the other side of the ridge and he said, hey, look at what I've got. Aren't you guys supposed to be guarding your king? And then he called out Abner by name. He said, Abner, apparently you're not doing your job very well. I think Abner didn't like David very much. But Abner had spent a lot of time around Saul, and Saul was throwing spears at David and trying to run down David. And have you noticed, if you have a person who is in your ear about another person and continually runs them down to you, even though you don't know them, you begin to form an opinion about that person. You hear what I'm saying? When you don't even know if those are the facts. I'd be careful about people who chirp in your ear about others who may not be giving you the straight skinny. And sometimes we have an opinion formed about a person before we've ever even said two words to that person. People love the gossip scene, don't they? The magazines on the rack right next to the mints. I'm just looking for mints. Oh, what's going on over there with that person? Boy, they don't look so good anymore, right? They always put the most flattering photos in those magazines, right? Faces contorted. Gain 10 pounds on the beach, right? You're like, whoa, wow. How many of you ever do the search where you watched a TV show years ago and on the internet it pops up? What do they look like now? Oh, let's go see what Wow, because you remember what they looked like years ago. Isn't it good that nobody's doing that for us? Do you ever look at pictures? You forget what's happened to you in a decade. You think that maybe it doesn't apply to you. And then you look at a before and after and you go, oh my goodness, what has happened to me? Time. Decay. Oh Lord, help me. And you start to celebrate that new body that's coming. More and more. I don't even know how we ended up there, but anyway, let's go back to verse 8. Personal rant. We move on. Now, Abner was either Saul's uncle or cousin. So there was a familial connection too. And Abner, instead of going with the Lord's anointed, decided to anoint this man named Ishbosheth. Some of you are thinking, who would ever name their child Ishbosheth? Oh, it gets worse. Ishbosheth means man of shame. You're like, what? Oh, yeah. Some of you may be considering this name. I don't know. I'm just kidding. No. Well, actually, his original name was Ishbal or Baal. Write down for your notes, 1 Chronicles 8:33. The word B-A-A-L, Baal, can just simply mean Lord. It's a Canaanite word, or master. But we all know that Baal, or Baal, became what? A Canaanite god. And so some Israelites apparently had a Baal ending on their name. I don't know all the reasons why. And so in a derogatory name, the way, the Jews would change the name and they would change the ending. And in this case, instead of him being Ish-Baal, it was changed to Ish-Bosheth. And it's something like this. That's a shameful name. Baal's a shameful name, so we'll just call you what it is. Ish is interesting because it's the name for man. So it can be man, in the original way you could define it, it could be man of the Lord or man who serves or something like that. Because Ish is man, but it also can mean in the fire. So in the fire for the Lord or something like that, but it becomes something like a man or fire and then this ending. So fire and shame.
You'll hear more from Pastor Michael in a moment.
Did you miss part of today's message? You can always listen again on demand. Catch every teaching from Pastor Michael Lance on the Walk in Truth app or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's an easy way to keep growing in God's Word and stay grounded in biblical truth throughout your week. Just search for Walk in Truth and start listening anytime.
Walk in Truth is here to bring God's Word to you every day, but we can't do it without your support. Your financial gift helps Walk in Truth broadcast on the radio and reach people all around the world through the podcast. Every gift helps, and would you consider becoming a monthly partner for just $5 a month? Together, we can keep bringing the hope of Jesus to those who need it most. Give today at walkintruth.com. That's walkintruth.com.
We'd love to see who's listening, so please connect with us on Facebook or Instagram. Just do a search for Walk in Truth Show. Now, back to Pastor Michael Lance right here on Walk in Truth.
In the fire for the Lord or something like that, but it becomes something like a man or fire and then this ending. So fire and shame, something like that. It was a derogatory nickname. If you ever had, you know, maybe school kids when you were growing up give you a nickname that you didn't appreciate, that's kind of what we're dealing with here. And he, Abner, made him, Ishbosheth, king over Gilead, over the Asherites, over Jezreel, over Ephraim, and over Benjamin, even over all Israel. Now remember, Saul and his family were from the tribe of Benjamin. So who made Ishbosheth king? Well, it was Abner. What was Abner's motivation to make Ishbosheth king? Well, here's part of it. David had a commander already. We're going to meet him. His name is Joab. And Abner, if David becomes the king, has lost his position and his job. Think about the shadow that David casts. The religious leadership of Jesus' day knew that he was the Messiah. They knew it. They could not deny his miracles. They could not deny his power. They even knew that Jesus had raised Lazarus from the dead. But the reason that they would not accept him as their king was that he threatened what? Their positions. Their ability to make wealth. Their power. Many of them were in league with Rome. Rome was giving them enough flexibility where they could rip off the people with the bazaar, what they did in the temple area. Jesus went in there, turned over the tables. He said, "This house shall be called a house of prayer. You've made it a den of thieves." They said, "Oh, we don't like this man." They tried to question him. They tried to see if he would give proper answers. And then they asked him no more questions. Because never did a man speak like him. He shut him down every time. He put him in their place. And they knew who he was and they killed him anyway. In fact, that's why they killed him. Do you know that? Jesus tells a parable where he says, he puts words in their mouth where they say, "This is the heir, come let us," what? "Kill him." He was a threat to them. And Abner becomes a type of the religious leader. Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he became king over Israel, and he was king for 2 years. He's going to be assassinated. The house of Judah, however, followed David. Now, here you have a divide. Here you have a nation divided. Some are following the anointed one, and some are following this son of Saul, which on a human level makes sense. The son who survived should be the king, right? Wrong. Jonathan already knew that David was the king. Jonathan's dead now. Ishbosheth has no business reigning over the people. In fact, he wouldn't even be on the battlefield with his father. Why? Was he too weak? Perhaps. Did they leave him at home just in case? Maybe. Jesus says, no one can serve two masters. You will cling to the one and hate the other, love the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. We are faced with this all the time. We have Ishbosheth over here, and we have David, or the greater David, Jesus, over here, and constantly we have to decide, to which king will we bow today? What throne will we bow before? Every day, we have to decide. And so, there's a division. Now, and the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. Little debate about the timing here, but I would just say this, that it may be that as wars were going on, it took some time for Ishbosheth to take the throne, but Abner did it, I don't think because of Saul's death, I think because of David's ascension. I think it's a counter move. Now, Abner, the son of Ner, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon. This is about a 50-mile journey. They would cross the Jordan and go south with the servants of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul. So now they are moving. And Joab, now Joab is David's commander. We're going to see him take a prominent role as the book unfolds. The son of that person. You can write down 1 Chronicles 2:16, anyway. And the servants of David went out and met them by the pool of Gibeon. So you have the two armies now moving. How did Joab hear about Abner being on the move? I don't know. But he had set up this puppet king in this location, and David had been set up in Hebron, and one army starts moving. They cross the Jordan. They start moving south. Joab starts moving north, and we're going to have a collision. And it may be that Joab got word. It was about a 25-mile trip for Joab and the soldiers and about 50 miles for the other guys. And so they meet at a pool. This is, notice, they sat down on one side of the pool and the other on the other side. So this is a body of water that's there, not a pool as we would think of it today. And they're on opposite sides of something like a reservoir, the reservoir of Gibeon, to provide some separation in space, looking at each other. We've all probably watched battle movies where for a while the two armies are there and you kind of wonder, who's going to fire the first shot? What's going to be the action point? Who's going to, you know, cause the fighting to begin? And Abner takes the lead, verse 14. He says to Joab, now let the young men arise and hold a contest before us. And Joab said, let them arise. So Abner says, okay, we've looked at each other long enough. We've had our iced tea. It's time to get up and get some action going. So let's have a contest, okay? The word contest in Hebrew, by the way, can have the idea of entertainment. It can suggest amusement or even a lighthearted joust or competition. And so notice what happens. So they arose and went over by count 12 for Benjamin, that is Saul's side, if you will, and Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. Now, there's the number 12. What do you think they may be saying with the number 12? There's 12 tribes in Israel, right? So they may be saying, look, we're going to have representatives from each group. We'll use the number 12 because both men want to be king. And so we'll have 12 from this group and 12 from that group, and let's let them settle it. Almost like when David took on Goliath, right? We'll just let two warriors beat it out, and if we win, you become our slaves, and if you win, we'll become your slaves. It's a representative battle, but it seems to be at least implied that it might be lighthearted at first. I remember some years ago, our youth group went out and played a broom hockey game in one of these ice rinks. Anybody ever play broom hockey? Oh, it's a glorious thing. Not really. Anyway, And so they had a ball and they had brooms. And we were playing another church. And all of a sudden, what was supposed to be a friendly game of broom ball, because you know how people are very calm in competitive situations, especially Christians, right? Right? So all of a sudden, it got a little rough out there in broom ball. People were throwing shoulders. People were saying, my church is better than your church. And one of our guys, we were coaxing him to come out on the ice. And he's kind of, you know, he had his shoes, you know, casual shoes on. And he was on the outskirts of the rink where everything's safe. And we're like, come on and play. He steps onto the ice. And one of the big bruisers from this other church set his sights on him. And he hit him. And it was not a light hit. And he cascaded into the boards and broke his collarbone. Collarbone was sticking out. And Pastor Michael had to try to step in. They were like, hey, let's calm it down. This guy's like in agony. He was on the ice for about 10 seconds at our coaxing. I include myself in that. Come on. Come and play. It'll be fine. It wasn't fine. So here's what happened. The bell rang. They moved from the two sides of the pool. Somebody said, let's get ready to rumble. But each one of them, 16, seized his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in his opponent's side. And so they fell down together, 24 dead. Seemingly in a moment of time, they fell down together.
You've been listening to Your Kingdom Come, Part 2 on Walk in Truth. And that was Pastor Michael's teaching in 2 Samuel, Chapter 2. You can email Pastor Michael with questions or prayer requests at contact@walkintruth.com. Now here's Pastor Michael with a final word.
Well, as I sit here in a studio in Corona, California, sometimes, you know, our producer does a great job, Rob Newton, of pitching me questions. And I think this one's best just to read. He said, listening to this teaching made me think about how easy it is for tension and division to grow. I have little patience with church family and with others, but what are some practical ways I can be someone who brings peace and points people back to God? I don't know if this is Rob's personal perspective, by the way. I think he's just framing a question, or maybe both, but we all have this, right? We listen to teaching, we watch things in the Bible, and then we go, okay, am I showing patience? Am I a peacemaker? What do I do when someone does me wrong or someone stabs me in the back metaphorically? And now I'm, you know, in a position where I have to see if I'm going to walk as God would have me to walk. I would say a couple things here. One, inevitably, if you're in the church or a leader in the church, you're going to get hurt. Interacting with people, there's going to be a lot of people who bless your life and they'll be great. And then there's going to be people who hurt you and disappoint you. And there, some of those people will have fish on their business cards, if you know what I'm saying. They'll claim to be Christians, and some of them are and just fall short. And so what do we do? How do we have a kingdom mindset? How do we have the Lord's heart when we're hurt? And I would just say, we've got to forgive. We've got to pray for those who hurt us inside the body of Christ and outside of it. And we have to ask the Lord to give us his heart towards people. He's so slow to anger, so patient. And when we have his heart, I think that makes, I know it makes all the difference. Maybe you're struggling with a situation right now that we can help you, stand with you in prayer or hear you out and try to give you some encouragement. We have a number you can call Tuesday through Friday here in Southern California, about 9 to 4 Pacific time. The number is 844-48-TRUTH. That's 844-48-TRUTH. We'll have pastors here standing by to pray with you. You can leave a prayer request off hours as well, or even tell us about how the program's hopefully blessed you. 844-48-TRUTH. This is Pastor Michael, and we'll see you right here tomorrow.
Walk in Truth is a listener-supported ministry. Your financial partnership helps us broadcast on this station and provide the podcast for free. Also, more people like you can dive deeper into the Word of God and apply it to their life. Please consider becoming a Walk in Truth monthly partner of at least $5 a month, or give a one-time gift. Please visit walkintruth.com to give. And join us tomorrow for part 3 of Your Kingdom Come.
There's a God who loves you, who entered into our pain, who was born on a starry night in Bethlehem. And his name, Emmanuel, means God with us. For all the messes that we create, all the conflicts that we have, all the battles to really decide who's going to be our king, is it Jesus or Ishbosheth or somebody else? Hopefully we can decide as the church, you are my king, I'm going to follow you. And I think when we do that, the world changes.
I'm Mike Massaro. Thanks for listening to Walk in Truth, where it's our goal to equip you to reach out with God's truth to all people.